with a hump day edition of the Sports Rush. I am Brett Rump along with Caleb Hatch with your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. Coming up on the show today, we've got Justin Kenny who will join us later this hour. We'll talk some high school football. Also, that new mercy rule that they have adopted for high school basketball is going to be in effect this year. And we'll talk to Justin Kenny about exactly how that is going to work out. Also, next hour, it's our chance to visit with St. Francis Cougars football coach Kevin Donnelly. Cougars coming off a big win, 68-0 over Madonna this past Saturday. And we'll talk about how the Cougars got things turned around. Remember, Will Holman, the senior running back, had been out for a couple of weeks, and the running game struggled. But Holman had a big game against Madonna. So we'll talk about the 49-0 halftime lead, the 68-0 after three. It was all Cougars on Saturday, so it should be a good conversation with Coach D coming up at 5:20 this afternoon. Still a disappointment and still frustrating that the Colts lost that football game against Baltimore. When you look around the NFL and look at all the teams the Colts are going to have to chase, obviously the one that stands out is Tennessee. And the Colts would have been in a prime position to catch the Titans, at least with a 3-3 record, if they would have gotten that win against Baltimore, because the Titans have to play Buffalo coming up this weekend. But the Colts just absolutely let the game slip away. And I started to think more and more about some of the mistakes, some of the errors that the Colts made down the stretch to let that 2-touchdown lead just completely evaporate and eventually lose it in overtime. And one of the things you have to point to Frank Reich about, the conservative play calling obviously is a major concern, because here's a guy who's known to be an aggressive decision maker who goes conservative right when it's time to really go for the kill. I mean, you had an opportunity with Baltimore to put them away by scoring points, and here's why that part of it was important. You knew that the defense was either, number one, physically getting worn out, because that fourth quarter, the defensive front had nothing left, or at least gave nothing. Whether they quit or whether they just were gassed, that defensive front put no pressure at all on Lamar Jackson. You're also playing at least a couple of guys in the secondary that are basically practice squad players. And so you know you've got some liabilities defensively. So if you can't cover up defensively your weaknesses, then the best way to win the game when you got a 2-touchdown advantage is to keep scoring, because as long as you score, they can't close the gap. And to be able to, or to decide that you're comfortable just getting a field goal, and clearly on 3rd and 8 when you run a running play right into the middle of the line of scrimmage, you're pretty much expressing to everyone you're very comfortable with a field goal in this situation to go up by 11. And it is still too much time for Lamar Jackson with the inexperience that the Colts had in the secondary, and the Colts ended up getting the kick blocked anyway. But the reason that you couldn't go conservative at that point is because you had to put up as many points as possible, because you had to assume your defense was somewhat of a liability with all the injuries and the backups that had to be playing in the game at that moment. And if you can't change that, then you got to just go for it offensively and try to outscore them in a shootout. And the Colts got away from that. In fact, the offense was playing so well. I thought it was as good as the offense has been all year long. Now, one concern when you look at the Colts is the total number of points that the Colts are scoring. I mean, they're not putting up a lot of big numbers, which means it puts a lot of pressure on the team defensively to come up with stops. Colts have 16 in two games this year, and then 24, 25, and 27 in the other three games. So the Colts are not exactly putting up big points. You know, they're kind of stuck in that 20-somethings and not getting the numbers that we've seen from the Colts offense in the past. And so the Colts try to do it better this week. They've got the Texans coming in. Colts are 9.5-point favorites as of right now. I feel pretty good about the Texans are in the bottom part of the league defensively. They're in the bottom part of the league offensively. They've got a rookie quarterback. The Colts obviously frustrated. I don't think they're going to quit. I think they're going to come out being back at home after three straight road games, being kind of energized by the home crowd. I think the Colts play well, and I think the Colts are 10 points better than the Texans lineup right now. So I feel pretty good about going with the Colts this Sunday against the Texans. Now, the following week, you have to go out west, take on the 49ers. Not sure who the quarterback is going to be at this point for San Francisco. That is going to be a Sunday night football game. That's the Sunday night game on NBC. And then the following week, coming into Lucas Oil Stadium, it's going to be the Tennessee Titans. And that one, at this point, if the Colts are hoping to make the playoffs, you almost have to think that's a must win. Regardless of what else the Colts do, they can't lose both games head-to-head against Tennessee if they expect themselves to be able to beat Tennessee for the division title. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. You know what's maybe even more frustrating is here we are griping about the Colts and the 1-4 start, the disappointments from the game on Monday night. Meanwhile, the Bears have their quarterback of the future. I think Justin Fields is going to work out just fine. And the Bears are 3-2, and if the season ended today, the Bears are in the playoffs. They've got a wild card position. How about that? Do you think the Bears stay in a wild card spot, yes or no?
No.
Schedule catches up with them?
Got to play the Packers twice still, so, I mean, that alone. Good luck.
But I guess you only got one in against the Lions so far. You have two left against Minnesota, still two to play against the Vikings. I mean, those are clearly both winnable games. Trying to think who else they play on their schedule. But 3-2 right now, Bears in the playoffs. And if you look at the AFC and the teams that would be in the playoffs, you've got teams like the Raiders, Cincinnati. Both would be in playoff positions. It'll be interesting to see what happens to the Raiders now after being 3-0, losing their last two, and losing their coach over the last couple of days. What's going to happen to the Raiders? The Colts have the Raiders on their schedule later in this season. It's a late-season game out in Las Vegas. And so we'll see what happens with the Raiders. But what about the Bengals? I mean, the Bengals, I think they've been a surprise. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team when it's all said and done. But how close can they come? I mean, everybody's raving about Los Angeles Chargers. Date myself. The Los Angeles Chargers and how great they are under Justin Herbert. And everybody wants to put the Chargers into the playoffs. What about the Bengals? Are people overlooking Cincinnati?
I don't think they're overlooking. I think this is the natural progression with the team. I mean, the Bengals played well when Burrow was healthy last year, so they're getting better. They're a team that could probably win anywhere at minimum 6 to 9 games at the top end. And with that division, I mean, that division's competitive. There's not going to be a runaway team there, but it will be competitive. And going back to the Bears, pulling up their schedule, so they have the Packers this week, and they're at the Bucs. They have the Niners at home, at the Steelers, and then the Ravens. I mean, the schedule's tough, and then that's excluding a game against the Cardinals, another matchup at Lambeau, at Green Bay, Vikings at Seahawks to close the season. I mean, can they approach near 500? Maybe, but they're not going to be a playoff team.
46862, if you've got anything to add, questions, comments, or suggestions, 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Boy, how awesome was it last night? The music is back. Truly one of the great sports themes, the NHL back on the four-letter network. Did you watch any hockey last night, Caleb?
Not a hockey guy.
I actually did kind of flip around and watch a little hockey last night. I can't say I watched a lot of it, but I watched actually the pregame ceremonies more than anything else because Las Vegas puts on such a show before the Golden Knights play their games. And so I did see that on the late game In the early game, it was the Tampa Bay Lightning celebrating their Stanley Cup championship with a raising of the banner and all. So I did watch a little bit of that. Saw some hockey, but probably not as much as some others. But it does give you kind of the chills when you hear that music. Round Ball Rock has still got to be the best, I think, ever as far as sports theme music. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's up there. I feel like there's one other that I'm forgetting that's probably like a 1B with Round Ball Rock. I mean, Round Ball Rock, yes, for sure. But there's got to be another that's up there that I'm forgetting that is just
Round
a step
Ball Rock
below.
Did not sound right having Fox using it for college basketball. It's like, no.
Yeah.
It just doesn't apply here. It is, I mean, as soon as you hear the music, one thing in your mind is the NBA on NBC, period. And John Tesh, the actual composer of that song. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. All right, so we're getting to week 9. Can you believe it is the final week of the high school football season? Plenty to talk about. We'll do that with Justin Kenny coming up later this hour. But we head into the final week. We've got 3 area unbeatens. We'll tell you later in the show who they will play and what the upset alert is on each of those teams. But right now, let's do it again. It's the high school football power rankings for the final regular season week of the season. Here we go. At number 10, the Bishop Dwenger Saints. I've got the Saints at number 10 just because they can beat good teams or bad teams. They can't beat good teams. Right now, they're kind of stuck in the middle, and they got to find a way to get over that hump. Now, I think Dwenger is a better team right now. Bodie Dickerson seems to have helped them at the quarterback position. They seem to now have more of a passing game. In fact, some of their late touchdowns that they've been scoring have actually been generated from a 4 or 5 wide set. I think that Dwenger may actually start spreading the formation, going with a quick pace, no huddle offense. It'll be very interesting to see if Dwenger kind of changes their identity for the playoffs, especially knowing that they've got some rematches that they'll have to face when they get into the postseason. But I've got Bishop Dwenger at number 10. At number 9, the Adams Central Flying Jets, just a 2-point try, has kept Adams Central from being among the ranks of the unbeaten. They've dominated pretty much everyone else on their schedule. They are one of the area favorites to take a state championship, that being in Class 1A. So Adams Central, number 9. At number 8, a team we saw last week, the Eastside Blazers. Laban Davis and the Eastside offense. Hey, it's pretty legit. The Davis kid's big, athletic, strong. Really tough to bring him down. He's got tremendous balance. I was impressed. And then they've got kind of a fullback type in Max Holman, or Dax Holman, who runs the football between the tackles. It's a pretty good duo for the Eastside Blazers. Right now, I've got them at number 8. At number 7, still have the East Noble Knights. You know, we've seen this before with East Noble, where they go through a little bit of a 2 or 3 week funk sometime during the season. Last year, they did it. We kind of pointed to the fact that Rowan Zolman was out injured. Well, now we know that Rowan Zolman's been dinged up a little bit this year, but hasn't been out of the lineup. But East Noble had back-to-back losses. They seem to have gotten things turned around. So East Noble's at number 7. And just ahead of East Noble, a team that we saw beat the Knights, the Norwell Knights. They're at number 6. I don't know how much of a threat they are in 3A. It's real hard to gauge at this point because the non-conference competition that Norwell faced didn't really tell us much, because they were 2 games that you expect Norwell to win. But Norwell's got a really good, solid defense. They can control the ball with their running game. The Knights at number 6. At number 5, I've got the Homestead Spartans. Didn't really pound Wayne and blow them out. It was a game that was pretty close until late in the game, and then Homestead pulled away. But the Spartans, still a team you probably don't want to see come up in the postseason. And Homestead, number five. At number four, the Snyder Panthers. We'll see them this week. If they get the passing game going with Hobert, man, that team could be tough. They've got a big offensive line. They've got a great running back, Tyrese Brown. Langston Lavelle, very good backup. They can really run the football. The question is, can they have balance to keep teams from stacking the box, trying to focus almost exclusively on taking away Tyrese Brown? We'll see. We'll get a look at them this Friday night at Lewis Field when they take on the undefeated Bishop Lewis Knights. At number three, the Carroll Chargers. It's really hard for me to say who's three and who's two, because they're completely different football teams. One, the Carroll Chargers, really led by a spread attack. They like to throw the football, beat you with big plays. Meanwhile, the Leo Lions, they like to power up the formation, put three running backs behind the quarterback, put him under center, and then run the football. And so it's two totally different styles. But Carroll has really done a good job defensively this year, and it's a team that over the years has struggled defensively. They actually lead the Summit Athletic Conference in points allowed per game. Meanwhile, Leo pretty much leading the area in points allowed per game. So the Lions right now at number two, Carroll at number three, and of course at number one, the Bishop Lewis Knights, still hanging on to the top spot in our high school football power rankings. We'll get a chance to see Bishop Lewis and Snyder Friday night under the lights in the raindrops. See the forecast for Friday, Caleb? Have you paid attention?
I saw rain, but I didn't know if there were storms mixed in with that. Hopefully not.
We started the week at like 40 to 50% chance of rain. And then it was at that time, I think early in the week, it was mostly in the morning with an occasional shower in the afternoon. Then maybe some clearing by evening. Well, the forecast has continued to progressively get worse. At this point right now, Friday does not look good at all. Just being completely honest, we've been blessed with great weather on Friday nights, but this Friday, it's like an 80% chance of showers. And yes, they are mentioning that word, thunderstorms. So hopefully no lightning, hopefully no thunderstorms. You can play through some rain. It's just not comfortable for fans, but that's why it's nice. We'll be there broadcasting the game. So if you're unable to make it, we will have the broadcast for you coming up this Friday night, starting at 6 o'clock with the Parkview Sports Medicine High School Football Tailgate Pregame Show. 7 o'clock, Shannon and I with play-by-play action. And after the game, we'll be at the Southgate Pizza Hut for your Indiana Physical Therapy post-game show, scores, highlights, coaches, interviews, and more to wrap up the regular season of high school football. You this week or Darren this week on the post-game show?
It is me this week.
So we'll be kind of in transition mode. We'll be talking about the Friday night results, the final championship standings for our area conferences. But also, once the games end on Friday, we're going to play like a coach. We're going to immediately turn the page to the postseason and start looking at some of the sectional matchups that will be coming up in week one. By the way, this little note as far as scheduling this week right now, a game that has been canceled for Friday night, the Northside Legends at Concordia. That game has been canceled due to COVID quarantine for a high number of Northside players. Now, Concordia, from my understanding, still looking for a possible game, and I went through and I checked who doesn't play on Friday, who's still looking for possibly an opponent on Friday night, and there's a few teams in there that would, you know, an 0-7 West Dell team that's Class 1A, that would be nothing for Concordia. I mean, I really don't think that's worth putting on the schedule. You've got a couple of teams up in the Northwest region with Hammond Morton, I think. They are looking for a game for this Friday. But the team I actually found that's in a larger class, Warren Central, probably not a good idea for the cadets to schedule Warren Central in place of Northside, especially with the 3A playoffs starting the following week. So yeah, I don't know if Concordia is going to find themselves a football game for Friday night, but the Concordia Northside game has been officially canceled. We'll take a break. When we come back, we got more on the Colts. Also, Justin Kinney's going to join us. We'll talk the high school basketball mercy rule. If you didn't hear about this, you should definitely stay tuned. Also, high school football sectional matchups. What is Justin looking forward to? And what sectionals, if things play out, will we get championship games where the two best teams could potentially meet? We'll talk to Justin about that coming up at 4:35. Back on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Caleb Hatch taking a look at the Colts. They just had not even a real practice, more of a walkthrough type situation today. They did release a practice report, and what's interesting is it's got the asterisk where it says, this is what would have happened if we had a regular practice. So if they were to go out and try to practice today, who would have been sitting out? Why would they have been sitting out? And it's a pretty lengthy list. Rodrigo Blankenship, of course, the kicker, dealing with the hip injury. He would not have practiced today, but that also leads us into the story that the Colts have signed a kicker to the practice squad after a tryout earlier this afternoon. So they've got a guy in camp on standby in case Blankenship isn't ready to go this Sunday against the Texans. Is it Badgley?
Michael Badgley.
Guy that has worn the horseshoe, but I don't even know if he actually kicked in a game. He was with the Colts, I guess, briefly in camp a couple of years ago. So Badgley is the guy that the Colts will count on. Again, this stresses the importance of kickers, Caleb. We've been saying this week, is a kicker the second most important person you have on your roster as far as guys that impact wins and losses. And if you look at Monday night's game, that injury to Blankenship where the Colts couldn't have another kicker ready to go. And I don't know what Rigoberto Sanchez, I don't know what kind of leg he has, what kind of accuracy he has. I mean, the one kick that he missed when they were saying something about Blankenship looking for his helmet, which I don't know if that was ever confirmed or not, but we found out that it seemed to be more of a story that the Colts were not comfortable with that distance, the 43 yards, knowing that Blankenship was nursing the injury. They decided to let Sanchez go out and try to kick it. He missed it. And at that point, then the Colts didn't have as much confidence, I think, in having Sanchez kick. So when it came back to a 45 yarder with perhaps a game on the line, you had Blankenship back out there. But I didn't think Sanchez's kick was all that bad. It just wasn't in line. It wasn't like a bad hook or a shank or a slice. It was a pretty straight on kick. He just needed to kind of be realigned a little bit. But he's got the stronger leg. He's the one that does the kickoff. So apparently the Colts wanted to have somebody ready, and so they've got somebody now, Badgley, sitting on the practice squad. But other guys, as far as practice today, if the Colts would have gone through a regular practice schedule, here's what they are projecting, guys that would not have been out there. You've got Darius Leonard. Now, here's the thing, Caleb. Wasn't it it was just ankles, wasn't it? Is the shoulder new? They've added ankles / shoulder to Darius Leonard.
Ankle's been there every report. The shoulder is new.
So he would not have practiced with ankle / shoulder injury. You have Xavier Rhodes with the concussion. He left the game the other day. Sendejo, who was the backup safety that was out there, who ended up leaving the game a bit dazed and confused. He is out with a concussion. Braden Smith, I'm real anxious to see how close he is, because there's a lot of projections that people are anticipating he might get back on the field this week. Braden Smith still out with a foot and thumb injury. Emoko Ture dealing with a groin injury. Rock Ya-Sin dealing with his ankle. Although Ya-Sin, I think, will be out there this Sunday. I think Ya-Sin will be a limited participant on Thursday, and he may be even a full participant come Friday. But I think Ya-Sin will be back on the field. Kwity Paye, still waiting for him to make his return to the lineup. But here's the positive news. Kwity Paye is the only one on the practice report today that would have been listed as limited in practice, which means he would have been giving it a go, or at least testing it a bit. It's that hamstring. Colts have to get some way to pressure quarterbacks. How many years have we talked about this? Is it pretty much since Mathis retired that we've talked about the Colts not having any kind of pressure on the quarterback? Because I feel like you can just recycle a lot of the shows we've had in the fall talking about the Colts over the last 6 years and just basically say, okay, just play one from like 2017. And you'd probably hear me saying the Colts have to figure out a way to get to the quarterback, whether it's in the scheme or whether it's personnel, but you feel like it's the same story year after year, and they try to address it, and they go get a rookie, and then he's out of the lineup, and the Colts did absolutely nothing. Kamoko Touré, last couple of weeks, yeah, he had a couple sacks, but overall just didn't feel like he was putting a lot of pressure either in the Miami game or at all on Monday night. And then finally, Jordan Wilkins has an illness. They keep saying non-football illness. But he's been out for like a week with this, right?
And he's not on the reserve COVID list either. So
I don't know what it is, but it's a non-football illness. And Wilkins missed practice last week. Now he's a DNP this week. So there you go. There's what the Colts have as far as their injury update. Hey, I started to think about this, Caleb. I want to hit this real quick before we have Justin Kenny. CSI Las Vegas. That was one of my favorite shows when it came on, 20 years ago or so. Just, it was must-watch TV for me. And I started to think of shows, like when you're younger, that maybe when you were in high school or maybe when you're in college, shows that were must-watch for you at the time, that if they came back and hit the airwaves as a brand new show today, the same show, that they would be a total bomb today, but they were one of the most popular shows the first time they ran.
It's interesting. The show that I think of is a show that is still very popular on streaming platforms, but I don't think it could work as a show now, and that's The Office.
Interesting.
Because just the content and pushing the envelope. Yes, exactly. It doesn't hold up as a show in current times. At the time when it came out, I mean, it was very funny, but society has changed in the past 15 years, and I don't think the show holds up long term.
Drew Carey's show was one that I used to watch every week, and I almost think now, I came across it a year or two ago, I don't even know if it's funny. It was like, did my sense of humor change? Maybe it's just a certain age that you think certain things are funny, and then you get older and it's like, yeah, that's stupid. I don't know, but what show did you watch religiously that was a top TV show at the time that if it came back and debuted today would be a complete flop? Friends is timeless, right? Seinfeld, Friends, those are timeless shows.
Yeah, I watch reruns of those all the time.
Yeah, but I'm going to say even a rerun. If Friends debuted on TV today, there would be nothing that would make it seem stupid that there's 30-something or 4-30-somethings living together. I don't know how old they're supposed to be.
They're supposed to be around 30. They'd have to change the cast slightly to make it more modern, but other than that, yeah, I mean, it works.
I mean,
there are a lot of shows that were essentially spinoffs of that show. I mean, not like direct spinoffs, but the concept is kind of similar, where you have, people sharing an apartment, and that's kind of, the context of the show.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Did you watch CSI Las Vegas, the Las Vegas, the original CSI? I was fascinated by that show.
I'm not a crime or police show guy, with the exception of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because that's a comedy.
Okay. Well, so you like the comedies, the sitcoms, that's kind of your...
Yeah. I don't do crime or police shows.
I don't do a lot. Like, I've never been big into Law and Order and some of those. Of course, that's the big news that Law and Order is returning. But CSI, I really did kind of get into that and found it fascinating. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We come back on the other side of the break. It's Justin Kenny from outsidethehuddle.net and OPS. We're going to talk about the new mercy rule that's being applied to basketball this year. Also, what are Justin's takes on the high school football sectional draw? Comes up next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. What TV show did you watch perhaps as a youngster that if it was to return to television today, like if it was to make its debut today, that just would not have the appeal and would not be a top television show? Got a number of texts in on this. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Couple of votes for Dukes of Hazzard. Would not play today. Probably true. Knight Rider. Well, you're not kidding there. Who would buy a show right now with a goofy talking car and everything? What about ALF? Would ALF, do you remember ALF, Caleb? Was that before your time, or do you remember ALF?
Before my time, but I know what you're talking about.
Would anybody watch that show today?
Probably not. I mean, it's just a cheesy kind of...
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm thinking like the cheesy shows like ALF or Mork and Mindy. Would that? I don't know if a Mork and Mindy would work today. 46862, what hit show did you grow up on or did you watch in the past? For me, I mentioned CSI because it's returning, and they're even returning. Yes, we got a text on this with the original cast. So the same people that made the show a huge hit 20 years ago, they're coming back and actually in the cast now. Joining us, of course, TV critic and of also with OPS and OutsideTheHuddle.net, it is the renowned Justin Kinney on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Justin, is there a TV show you used to watch religiously that was a big hit in your younger days that if it came back to television today would be a complete flop?
Ooh, man, that's tough. I was going to go Saved by the Bell was classic when I was growing up, but it's already come back. It's already had a, I don't know if it's a reboot or a sequel on Peacock. It's not half bad, actually. It's much better than the original show.
Let me
going
rephrase
back and watch
this.
It now, it's just terrible.
Let me rephrase this. Let me just say, if Saved by the Bell didn't exist 20, 30 years ago, whatever it was, if it didn't exist and it debuted today, would it be as popular as it was when it debuted 30 years ago? It's like... Not that it would be a reboot or it would come back, but if it was a brand new show today versus being a brand new show 20 years ago, 30 years ago, whatever, would Saved by the Bell be popular if the previous history didn't exist?
Oh, that's tough because it would have to be updated. I mean, if you tried to release the show now set in the early 90s, it would flop. It would have to be updated a little bit. But it's difficult. It seems like every generation, kind of like music, when you go back and you say, oh, you know, my generation's music was the best and everybody's after that stinks. It's kind of the same thing with TV shows is, you know, it was the prime when you were growing up or, you know, as a teenager and a kid. That was the golden era of television, and now it's just trash. So it's difficult to tell, but they, you know, they keep trying to reboot shows, and some of them stick, but the majority of them don't. So I would say Saved by the Bell, a reboot, if it tried to come out today, wouldn't fly.
I think I just figured out the average age of my listener. Leave It to Beaver and Father Knows Best are two of the texts that we got in. I'm surprised that these people even have a phone that has text capabilities. But also another vote came in for The Weakest Link. That's interesting because that doesn't seem like it's been that long ago. But yeah. They said The Weakest Link, if it debuted today, it would not be the hit it was when it came out. Like, I would still watch The Weakest Link. I watch those game shows at night. Like Deal or No Deal, I think if it came out right now, it would still be a hit show. But
yeah,
it had a very short shelf life. Millionaire, I think that would be a hit show if it never happened before.
Well, look, they're trying to, you know, they got Press Your Luck on primetime in the summertime and some of those other classic ones that have come back. So, yeah, I think Weakest Link could come back. I think Millionaire could come back. And especially in the summer when there's nothing else to watch.
And The Wall. I don't know if you ever saw that one this summer, but I think that might actually be a LeBron James production, if I'm not mistaken. I know he had a show this summer that he produced. All right, we're off subject.
Sounds right, yes.
Let's how about we talk some high school sports, Justin?
Sure, let's do it.
Big news this week. They're going to introduce the mercy rule that we've become familiar with in high school football into high school basketball.
Now, there were a couple of questions that did come up because I've seen this kind of both sides of it posted. Is this 35 regardless of when it happens, or is it only for the second half alone?
Only the second half alone. So 35 plus after halftime, starting at halftime and past. So, sorry, if you get up 37-2 in the first quarter, it will not activate until the third quarter begins.
And so if it's then 37-3, you stop the clock. So,
yeah.
So what, okay, so is it automatically through the rest of the game, regardless of the score, once it hits 35 for the first time? So if somebody hits a bucket and it goes from 33-35, the other team comes back, hits a bucket, makes it 33 again, it's still, once it's activated, it's on, right?
Correct. It's just like football. So once you hit that 35-point barrier, the clock starts running as a running clock, does not stop no matter how close you get.
Have you gotten any reaction from any of the local coaches as far as what they think of this rule?
You know, it's interesting because I reached out to a couple and a couple of them didn't like it, and it's kind of various reasons. Some of them, they look at it as, man, that's kind of an opportunity when we get some younger players in if they are up 35. Other ones feel like it's the, you know, kind of coddling kids and they can't handle, you know, routes, you know, time after time after time. Some people like it. You know, I think depending on the situation, everybody's going to have a different opinion. You know, if you're a parent of a kid that barely plays, yeah, you want to be able to have a normal game and then get in. Me, as somebody who, you know, goes to doubleheaders and similar to you, you know, those early games in the SAC, you're like, why are we even doing this here? You know, Northside against whoever, it seems like, you know, we won't have to worry about that.
Ouch.
So it's my alma mater, I can say that. So I think it's all about the perspective, all about the situation you're in. And, you know, whether you agree with it or not, I think it's at least going to speed things up at the very least. And maybe it's a benefit to these kids. You know, it's particularly on the road, a road game during the week. You know, let's just go and either take our lumps or route our opponent, get home and be done with it. So, you know, by and large, it's going to make things quicker. And in that respect, I think a lot of us can agree that it's for the better.
You know me, Justin, I would love to talk high school football sectional draw and put a lot of my focus on the rotten brackets and why we need seeding. But I'm not going to do that. I'm actually going to focus on a couple of the sectionals where I think they got pretty good draws that are fairly balanced, and it sets up what I think should always happen, which is the best two teams in a sectional meet for a championship. I'll start in Class 2A, where you've got Eastside and Lures, both unbeaten through 8 weeks. A lot of hype surrounding a potential rematch here. What are the chances these two teams meet in the final? Is there anybody else in that entire sectional that has a chance to stop that from happening before we get to November 5th, I believe it is?
Well, we felt like maybe Central Noble could be that team that could challenge Eastside, but as you saw firsthand last week, that's not happening. So Eastside would meet Central Noble in the semifinal. Nobody can match up with Bishop Lures in the bottom half. No winning team in terms of winning records in that bottom half other than Bishop Lures. This is inevitability. I think you just hope over the next couple weeks that those two teams are able to stay relatively healthy or get relatively healthy. And it will be Eastside Bishop Lures 3 if we're looking at the last 2 years where these two teams have met. It'll be the third time in 3 years that these two squads have a showdown in the sectional. So it was 2 years ago, it was the semifinal. Last year, it was the final. And this year, it'll be the final again.
What about Class 3A? We look at Sectional 27, where you've got Norwell on the opposite side of both Oak Hill and Peru. When I looked at the teams that were in that sectional, I thought Oak Hill, Peru, not really sure which way to go between those two teams. But I feel like Norwell goes in as somewhat the favorite in this sectional. They would not meet until the championship. Looks like a fairly balanced draw in Sectional 27, Class 3A.
Yeah, I would agree. And Oak Hill sitting there at 6-2. One of their losses is to Eastbrook, the second-ranked team in Class 2A. And the other one is a Mississinewa team that's pretty solid in Sectional 20. And I would say they are the bigger threat to Norwell than Peru. Peru is just in a conference with the Three Rivers Conference that just doesn't have a lot of solid football teams in it. Even the traditional power in there, and Southwood is 4-4 on the season. So I would say Bud Osmond and the Oak Hill Golden Eagles are the biggest threat to Norwell in this sectional, but it's a hard sell to try to convince me that anybody can match up. Usually you would say, okay, a Concordia Lutheran team with maybe 3 or 4 wins in the SAC is a challenger, but I haven't seen anything out of Concordia over the last 2 months for me to think that they can compete with Norwell, particularly with Concordia's offense really being its weak point and Norwell's defense being its strong suit. So Norwell is a significant favorite in sectional 27. I think if anybody's going to give them a run, it would be Oak Hill, but I would still take Norwell in that matchup.
The sectional 20 in Class 4A is an intriguing one because nobody really has the dominant one-loss record. Mississinewa 5-2, the only team that has a record above 500. And you've got a couple of SAC teams that are in the bottom half of the conference standings. But a lot of times when you get to postseason like this and you take a city team and you move them out to take on a rural team, it doesn't mean much when you look at the one-loss records. What are the chances in Sectional 20, Class 4A, for Wayne and Southside in this bracket?
I've had some people reach out to me this week since the draw and said they feel like Wayne is the team in the Sectional 20. And when you look at it, you say, okay, well, Marion's got more wins, Delta, Mississinewa, New Haven. But it's that SAC bubble, right, when they just beat up on each other all year. And even it kind of skews the Sagard ratings, too, because they all have common opponents. So it kind of, you know, it struggles in terms of trying to match these teams up by the Sagard ratings. Is Wayne can be pretty good. They have a really, really good running attack. They've been able to stay competitive despite their 2-6 record. And, you know, the advantageous matchup with Marion in the first round, you know, they would probably have to go to Delta in round two. And then who knows, you know, would they face a Mississinewa team that I'm still taking Wayne? So this is one of those instances in this sectional where you look at a 2-6 Wayne team and how they've played. And if they're playing good in the next couple weeks, they have a shot in this one. Delta's not an overpowering Delta team. Mississinewa, you look at strength of schedule and it's not there. The Wayne Generals are that SAC team in terms of, for me, to keep an eye on in terms of winning a sectional championship that could potentially come out of nowhere.
Yeah, I think it could ultimately end up being Wayne and New Haven in that championship. All right, let's go to the other 4A sectional where you've got Leo East Noble playing in the first round. Oh, that's right, I wasn't going to say anything. But if you look at the other side of the bracket, because Leo East Noble, whoever wins that game, is going to have a seat in the championship. And it's no discredit to DeKalb and Wawasee, but they're just not on the same altitude as Leo and East Noble. The other side has Northridge, Northwood, Angola, and then Columbia City. And I don't know that Angola is going to be competitive in this group, but I do think Northridge, Northwood, Columbia City kind of sets up an intriguing lower half of the bracket here in this sectional as far as who survives to take on the winner of Leo East Noble in that championship.
Yeah, it does. I think, you know, you can make a case for several teams in that sectional 19 on the bottom half of the bracket. And you look at Northwood and Northridge round two, that was a game that Northwood won by 34 points the first time around. So you have to like Northwood's chances at home to start that sectional. And then Columbia City at home and against Angola. It looks like a Columbia City-Northwood showdown. Northwood traditionally very successful, but maybe a little bit rebuilding this year. That's a team that only lost to Leo by 2 a year ago in the playoffs and by 4 the year before. So when you look at it, is could Northwood be that team to challenge somebody in that upper half of the bracket? It's round 2 with Leo and East Noble. It's once again in Kendallville. What to expect, I'm not sure. But to your satisfaction, we get that right off the bat in round 1. I'm sure that pleases Mr. Rump.
Yeah, and I'm going to skip past 5A. We got a chance to talk about that next week where you've got Northrop versus Snyder, Northside versus Dwenger. Of course, we'll wait and see how things go with Northside. As we mentioned earlier in the show, Northside Concordia canceled this week because of quarantine situations with the Legends. But I do want to get this in on 6A before we get to our break. Homestead and Carroll will have a rematch. It's going to again be out at Carroll, and that will open Sectional 3. But what it means is Warsaw gets basically a double bye. They get the bye because 6A is off on the first week of the tournament, and then they get a bye in the semifinals because it's only a 3-team sectional. That I can't imagine that's a good thing for Warsaw.
You know, it's funny, Brett, because, you know, during sectionals for basketball, we talk about that team that gets the bye into Friday. And, you know, coaches are like, I really don't like that. I'd rather play on Tuesday or Wednesday. And that's just a matter of days. Warsaw has to wait 3 weeks in between games. And so it's going to be really fascinating on how Warsaw approaches it with Coach Curtis. You go back to like a training camp mentality for a couple weeks because you can't prepare for your opponent because you don't know if you're going to play Homestead or Carroll until that second week. So it's a delicate balance, and I agree with you. It can't necessarily be a good thing. The only thing positive is, okay, maybe you get a little bit healthy and all that and maybe get back to basics. But, yeah, sitting in the sidelines for effectively 3 weeks is not ideal when you've been playing each and every week for the last two and a half months. So we'll see how the Tigers handle it. But at the very least, we'll get Homestead and Carroll round two, and we'll see if that one's as exciting as the first time around.
Appreciate it as always, Justin. Look forward to the coach's show coming up tomorrow, 6 o'clock. We'll see you then.
All right, buddy. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Yep. Justin Kenny joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from OPS and OutsideTheHuddle.net. Great coverage of high school football, high school basketball. Of course, we're only a couple of weeks from the girls' high school basketball season getting underway. We'll take a break coming up in our next hour. Among our guests, we've got Kevin Donnelly, coach of the St. Francis Cougars. We'll talk to Coach D coming up at about 5:20. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.